I really have to be honest. This episode kind of triggered me. Not just in terms of my opinions of myself and my body and how I look, but the language and the verbiage that we are now allowed to use in modern day society. And I am kind of being a jerk about it. I'm going to be honest. After doing this, I'm not happy with it.
So we're talking about diet culture today.
Yeah.
And we have a guest, a dietitian, who is kind of walking us through the new ideas and language and
boundaries, sensitivities. Like, it was a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And my Midwestern, middle-aged, just suck it up attitude really came out.
Yeah.
And then I know that that's not okay, and that's why I'm going to continue to work through it. But this is an episode and a topic that we're going to have to revisit again, probably multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
More for me than for you guys. Sorry. I'm not worried about you. You're just going to have to go on this journey
with
me.
Listen. I think you're right. There's like layers of almost like being insulted about things, or like maybe things I don't agree with, but I don't know why I don't agree with them, and kind of peeling back the layers of what I've been taught or what I've picked up about women's bodies and what we're allowed to do and say and how we should look and how we shouldn't look. And mm-hmm. So Lauren was very patient with us as we kind of picked through that. This is not the end of the conversation. We've already said we want to have her come back. I think we're probably going to get lots of feedback from this episode.
Yes.
And we will, like we said last week, this is a journey and a continuing conversation where we're all learning and asking questions. And we might not all end up at the same spot, but we're at least going to listen to other people.
We're going to try really hard.
All right, before we get started, let me read the review of the week. Quasi Poetica gave us an iTunes review. It says, I've enjoyed listening to you ladies. You're real, raw, sarcastic, and funny. I'm tired of the prepackaged, flawless podcast. This show is refreshing.
Oh, thanks so much.
Yeah. And I fumbled my way through that just to not be flawless. Not because I can't read.
Way to be. And as always, if you want to leave a review, we would appreciate it. Go to iTunes, leave a couple of sentences, leave us 5 stars, and share with your friends, obviously.
Yep. All right. We hope you enjoy this episode. Let us know what you think.
Welcome to Not Terrible with your hosts, Jess Hooker and Mary Graham. Jess is a part-time vegan yogi. You can find her on her motorcycle, usually heading to therapy. Mary is a writer and Jesus follower. She loves camping almost as much as cheeseburgers. The Not Terrible podcast is two childhood friends who have been through the ringer, learned some tough lessons, and kept going. Jess and Mary share stories, advice, and lessons on each episode. They try to find humor in the chaos and learn from their mistakes in an attempt to feel less alone as they navigate life's journey.
I still have Girl Scout cookies, too, so.
Oh, gosh.
Well, my dad, you can do, like, the donation to troops if you don't want to buy your own cookies.
Mm-hmm.
My dad, I think he thought he was donating, but he just asked for 2 boxes of each. So instead, but he didn't want them. So he didn't choose the donate thing. He ordered 2 boxes of each. So we have, I don't know how many cookies, and then we just have them. So I was like, hey, we can go downtown and like just hand out some Girl Scout cookies to people, like let the girls just give cookies away.
Yeah.
But right now they're just sitting in my, listen, my dad donated Thin Mints and I already ate them.
So. They're gone.
Oh, that's no Thin Mints
for you.
Thanks, Rick. They were delicious. So we're going to end up donating all like the gross cookies, which sounds so horrible.
I like the shortbread ones. Yeah, those are my favorite. Those are with good. The Girl Scout face
the
on them.
Treefuls.
Is that what they
treefuls?
Are?
Treefuls, yeah. I mean.
I feel like it's subjective.
Yeah.
You know, there's whose favorite is.
There's a time I'll eat them. Like, just if I'm feeling.
When
it has
the
to
thin
be
mints
a mood.
Are gone.
Yeah. It's a certain time.
When I have no other option.
When the Thin Mints and the Samoas are gone. All,
how do you think that, how do you think that the selling of Girl Scout cookies, do you think that plays into diet culture at all?
It's funny that you asked that because Girl Scout cookies are a big topic of conversation in a lot of sessions with clients because there is a little scarcity because you can
mindset.
Only get them.
Mm.
Yeah. So like a lot of my clients will hoard them. And, but I think it's a great thing. I mean, overall, I think it's a really great concept.
It's everybody's personal relationship with the food. It doesn't have anything to do with the Girl Scouts cookies.
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to blame little girls. It's what I wanted to do. Come on, get with me here. I needed an excuse.
It's their fault.
It's all their fault.
It's their fault, yeah.
Yes.
I still, when we were making room for the new cookies that were coming in, I found boxes from last year in the freezer, and I was like, dang it. Like, because we just buy them because both the girls sell them, so we buy them even if I wouldn't really buy them. And I was very proud of myself. It was an accident that I missed them for a year, but
yeah.
Oh. No.
All right. Let's get to it.
What?
Yes. Right. Our guest today. Can we do it? No. Do you want to?
I just wanted to call attention to this little,
sure, please. That's beautiful.
This is my little clipboard that I brought today.
Yeah.
That really had nothing to do with anything. I was just,
it's cute. I like it.
You
Did you
know.
Find it?
I found it in my office.
So it was like, is it one of those things that you've lost for a while or hadn't used and then you found it and you're like, this is brand new.
It was brand new and I bought it and never used it.
Oh, that's cool.
I have several of those that I forgot that I have.
Yeah.
I just keep buying them. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the, what do you call that on the front of
the clipboard part?
The clipboard part with the folder, the whole thing. I like that a lot.
It's the best of all my favorite things.
Yes.
So.
I like that. And I like the colors.
Thank you. I put a sticker on the
back. It's a little muted. Yes. I like it.
Okay, now we can do the interview.
Okay, good.
I just wanted everyone to know about my
about your new folder. Now, is this not terrible specific?
No, it's whatever needs to be done right now.
Oh, okay.
Clipboard of power.
There, I like it. I like the clipboard of power. That's
I did not know where you're going with that.
I didn't either. That's why
I
got
know, I was just like,
dramatic pause.
Yeah. All right, well... our guest today is dietitian. Is that correct?
That is.
Lauren Riker. And you're here to talk about diet culture.
I am.
Which is, oh my gosh, everywhere.
Yes.
In the best ways and the worst ways.
Yeah.
Can you tell us? So if someone's listening to this for the first time and they've never heard that phrase, diet culture, like how would you describe that to someone?
Well, I think it's really important to understand the context of when I say diet. So if you, by definition, the word diet means the foods a person can eat or does eat, right?
Mm-hmm.
But diet culture has really taken over the definition. And when you use it in the phrase diet culture, it's a system of beliefs that weight, size, and shape are more valued than health and well-being.
Sure. Yeah. There's such a negative connotation with the dirt, with the word, with the dirt. Yes. Dirt too. With the word diet,
right?
That even at our house, we often say, like my daughter was on a ketogenic diet, a hospital mandated ketogenic diet, which is very different from the weight loss keto. And we started just using the word menu because she was just like, I hate this diet, you know? And I was just like, oh, I feel like I can hear her saying that as a teenager and then into her 20s, and this is not good.
Yeah.
So we just started saying menu instead.
Right. That's a really good way to rephrase it. And I will say that I think a lot of people get confused because an extreme medical condition will require an extreme way of eating.
Sure.
But not the average person. We don't require, you know, average, a healthy body doesn't necessarily require an extreme way of eating.
Right.
So what would you describe as an extreme way of eating?
Well, I mean, I think that to her point, the ketogenic was originally created for children with epilepsy.
Yeah.
So whereas, you know, if you're trying to manage your blood sugar, whether you have prediabetes or diabetes, the goal is to manage the blood sugar, not necessarily to change the size of your body.
Right.
Or if you have kidney disease or renal failure, you know, you're going to have to eat differently than if you didn't have those comorbidities.
Right.
So what would be, so then So I don't have any health problems, knock on wood. And so then deciding I can't eat or should eat only certain foods, is that considered bad?
Yeah, I think it all, there's so much nuance when it comes to the way someone eats. Mm-hmm. And it really comes down to the intention mm-hmm. behind what you're doing. If it is, again, if it goes back to altering your body size, weight, or shape, at the end of the day, that's a diet. Mm-hmm. And that's engaging in diet culture.
Yeah, and you said earlier, like, a healthy body doesn't need extreme diets. And I assume when you say that you also mean a healthy mind, too, because so much of this is, I mean, everything around us tells us that our body isn't right. It's not good enough. It needs to change. You know, it's just any magazine you pick up, I mean, all of these, even the diet tea stuff that you see celebrities promoting on Instagram and all of that. Did you guys see where Jamil?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I may have said that backwards, her name. But that she just, like, pulls no punches. Mm-hmm. And she just went against the Kardashians and just said,
right.
You guys are out of your mind. You're capitalizing on something that is,
right.
She's is really
predatory.
Really, right. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
She's really making waves in this whole movement. Mm-hmm. It's pretty awesome. And I want to backtrack and just make it clear that not all medical conditions require a change in the way you eat.
Right.
Some extreme medical conditions mm-hmm. may require
right.
a change in that. So.
Right.
And that's where, you know, reaching out to a professional to help with that and let you know what would be best for you and your circumstance.
Mm-hmm. I know that personally, that my biggest motivator to have a diet that serves my brain and my body has always been for mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Like to know the things that the aspartame is not, it's in also for my daughter, it's mm-hmm. a trigger for seizures. It's, you can just tell it causes a disruption. It causes imbalance. But that took years.
Right.
Because
right.
I remember, I mean, how old were we when we were on our first diets? Like, mm-hmm. consciously, I mean, I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And I remember, like, if I just have one piece of toast for breakfast, right. lunch, and dinner, then yeah. I'll look like my skinny friends. And that's just how it started.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah, and there, you know, one person may be able to tolerate aspartame in the next, like, for
sure.
me personally, it gives me migraines, so yeah. I avoid it as much as I can. But someone else may be able to drink it or drink. I say drink because I drink.
Right.
I used to drink Powerade Zero and insulin get a migraine. But you know, if I drink Diet Coke, I don't get a migraine. So it's all in the form and
right.
the concentration of it. But
yeah,
I really, part of diet culture is demonizing one food and glorifying other foods, and so. You may have a personal way that you have found that makes you feel the best.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's super important, but that's you being in tune with your body.
Right.
Whereas some people just will follow rules mm-hmm. or given by someone else
right.
that may work for their body, but not the person that they're giving them to. So yeah, there's just so much nuance with it.
I wonder if that's why I've never been successful on a diet, because I feel like you're not going to tell me what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's been my biggest
right.
my biggest thing is, like, there's no way that I'm just going to be told what to eat, especially with, yeah. But there's so much celebration in food,
right.
and there's so much grief in food. Like, it's just, like, you can, any emotion you have, you can find a reason to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, and, oh. That's
so
just
true.
Yeah, and I think that happens at home usually, or in your family, your culture, and
mm-hmm.
that's how whatever positive or negative feelings you have,
yeah,
towards food probably start there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah. I think it has a lot to do with how you're raised.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you were raised in a diet culture, you know, free zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
how is that possible?
Yeah. it's everywhere. Like you said at the very beginning, it's everywhere, and it has been really, I guess, portrayed to the consumer that it's necessary for health and that, you know, all thin people are healthy people and mm-hmm. all fat people are unhealthy and all thin people are happy and all fat people are unhappy. And that's just not true. So I think that it's a combination of, you know, starting from a young age and then also what you're exposed to and who you hang out with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What happened in your life that led you to this profession?
Yeah. So a lot of things.
Yeah.
I guess to start with, growing up, my parents were trying the best that they could. Mm-hmm. And really, I think they were under the impression, too, that body size, you know, indicated the health of a person, mm-hmm. Like most people. And so there were a lot of times where growing up, we would eat super healthy at home, and then I would get out to friends' houses and just lose my mind.
Yeah.
We would be playing a game or playing something, and I would just be obsessing over their pantry. Like, I wonder what's in there. I wonder if they have Doritos.
Mm-hmm.
From a young age, I learned, I was very into cooking and just trying new food, new recipes. Let's be honest, I didn't follow recipes. I just experimented, but just from a very young age.
Throwing
stuff in. Yeah. Oh, I could tell you so many stories. But from a very young age, I was just very intrigued with food and tasting food, yummy food, but also knowing there were, well, knowing is relative, but feeling like there were good and bad foods.
Right.
And so, growing up, this obsession, I would say, it turned more into an obsession of nutrition. And I got my first real job, and I say real because I actually made money, at Curves for Women. I really just began to obsess over, okay, if I eat a lean cuisine for dinner, then I notice that, like, I'm a pound lighter that week or whatever, which I really try not to use numbers, but just as an example. And so I was not only obsessing about my body, but I was also helping other women at mm-hmm. age 17 obsess over their bodies. I'm 17 years old telling adult women, you know, what they should do for their bodies, which I think back on it, I'm like, oh, that was not wise or ethical. It turned into, I ended up studying to be a dietitian, and I loved my experience. I went to Ball State University, and I did my graduate program and my dietetic internship through Ball State as well. Okay. And so that's kind of how it all happened. And throughout my experience of becoming a dietitian, thankfully I had a lot of resources and support to really help me turn that obsession around into a healthy relationship with food. Therapy is a big key factor into that. So mm-hmm. Very, very thankful. I don't feel like if I didn't go through that journey, I wouldn't be where I'm at helping other women and men figure out their right. relationship with food.
Right. And how long have you been in the field?
So I have been, I haven't thought about that question in a while. So I have been doing this for about 6 years.
Okay. All right. So what is it that you do in your practice right now?
So I have my own business. It's called Renovate Your Plate. My motto is I'm helping women and men renovate the way they think about food. So I contract with three different practices here in Indianapolis, mm-hmm. Mindful Me and Northside Mental Health and Southside Pastoral Counseling.
Mm-hmm.
So I see clients there primarily one-on-one, but I also lead workshops and courses and various group options as well.
Awesome.
So,
yeah. Okay. So I've followed you on Instagram for a while, and Jess and I have a relationship with you. We've asked you to come and teach at the studio before. Can you tell us what are some ways that we just see diet culture in our everyday lives that we probably don't even realize?
Yeah, so they're sneaky. some are more obvious than others, mm-hmm. but anytime you see a message that is encouraging you to change your body size, weight, or shape, that is diet culture. There are different variations of diet culture, such as like wellness culture, which is really based on the or even packaged in the idea that taking care of your health can also be based on morality. Like, you know, if you're taking care of your health, then you're a better person. Or there are specific words that you can easily, I think, start with by pointing out those, such as like clean eating, counting, whether it's macros, calories, mm-hmm. points, cleanse, detox, burn, like burning your calories or earning your food through exercise. Mm-hmm. Before and after pictures, that's a pretty obvious one, but I think a lot of people, they automatically just assume that's more for health. But yeah, so I guess that's a few places to start.
So from something you just said, my point of view as a Christian, I grew up believing that being overweight was actually a sin. Mm. Like we were taught in the church.
Oh, like gluttony.
Gluttony. Yeah. Like you are less worthy than other
oh, wow.
creations because of your weight, which like right. is going to make me cry. Like that is a horrible
oh, yeah.
like mistruth. There's nothing biblical about that. But like right. we have ingrained mm-hmm. in so many different people. Oh, crap.
That phone never rings. I'm not answering it because it's not anybody.
We have ingrained.
God's calling.
He's calling to tell us that he doesn't care what you weigh.
I love it.
Thank you for calling, Jesus.
Leave a voicemail.
It's a busy week for you. It's right before Easter.
Oh, my gosh.
Can we leave it?
We'll have to call you back. Jesus is calling. That's a book, too.
I don't like that book. Don't read it.
Okay.
So many thoughts. But like we have a whole, you know, population that literally believes mm-hmm. that you right. are less worthy mm-hmm. if you are bigger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so sad. And you're right. It evokes a lot of emotion.
Yeah.
And that's really such a good, segue into why diet culture is so dangerous is because it basically gives us the message that our bodies cannot be trusted, mm-hmm. that they were not designed for your well-being. They were designed to be controlled and manipulated, and that they are a problem. And that's so problematic because from a really young age, when girls and boys they hear that message from their parents, from, you know, even people in the church or mm-hmm. All over.
TV, the internet, everywhere.
Right, there's yeah. so much weight stigma that from a very young age, people are feeling like their bodies are a problem. And I don't feel that God would ever want us to feel that. I mean, he designed our bodies the way he wanted them to be. Mm-hmm. So, and with that, he designed our bodies so we could be capable of taking care of ourselves without, mm-hmm. you know, an external factor.
Mm-hmm.
playing a role in that.
Yeah, but isn't it wild? Like Mary pointed it out, and I just thought about this. Diet culture is literally in every facet of our life.
Right.
It's in our schools, it's in our churches, it's in our social settings, it's in our social media. It's everywhere.
It really is.
Yeah, I mean, you go to the grocery store and you stand in line and you're like, oh my gosh, I am a big, ugly, awful person. Mm-hmm. And that's where, yeah, and then yeah. you leave. Yeah.
Yeah. It's extremely problematic. And they know, diet culture knows what it's doing. It's not a multi-billion dollar industry.
Right. It's a brand. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And so their selling point is are your insecurities. So.
Mm-hmm. Your weakness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. So when someone comes to you, is mm-hmm. that usually what you're battling the most is that they've just been told that they're not okay?
Yeah. For the most part. I mean, that's a good way to summarize it. The sad thing is that diet culture is also in our healthcare system.
Right. Yeah.
So doctors have told, you know, if you lose X amount of pounds, then you could reverse these mm-hmm. this health condition, which is extremely problematic. So basically do whatever you can to make your body smaller. So
an extreme.
Right.
Yeah. Wow.
So it's really my job is to help enable the healing from mm-hmm. from diet culture.
What is a good way to say, because I know at our house, like, is it a good idea for you to eat a bag of Oreos before, you know, when you get home from school? no, it's not. And so I've always tried to phrase it in different ways, like, how much water have you had today? Mm-hmm. Have you had anything that is caring for your body, that's giving you nourishment right now? Like,
yeah,
you know, instead of going, don't eat those, they aren't good for you.
Right.
Well, yeah, Oreos are good for you sometimes. Mm-hmm. Right. They're really good for
double
you.
Double stuff.
Right. Yeah. They're good.
So it's just like, is there like a some phrases or something that you could suggest for us to
like to healthy ways to help our kids be wise eaters?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It is really tricky because kids are naturally intuitive eaters.
So yeah.
I use the phrase intuitive. That's really the way I teach or
sure.
That's the framework I use to help people become normal eaters. Kids are intuitive eaters. Mm-hmm. And so when they can they know that they can trust their bodies, when they are reminded that their bodies aren't a problem, mm-hmm. and they feel safe to choose the foods that sound good, mm-hmm. that's naturally going to incorporate variety. I say it's tricky because parents that have a diet mentality are looking at it from a different perspective. So, you know, if cookies sound good, great, have some cookies, maybe, you know, but be mindful of how you're feeling. Like,
right.
be aware of that. So really just like engaging them to check in with their bodies.
Right, mm-hmm. yeah.
Because when you set rules, even if, I mean, this is a pretty benign rule, but it still is a rule, like saying, okay, have cookies, but also pair it with a banana or an apple or sure. you know, something. That's still, that's giving that message like, oh, I can't eat cookies by themselves. Mm-hmm. Whereas eating cookies by themselves is pretty normal.
Mm-hmm.
But saying, hey, check in, how do you feel? And when they have that freedom to choose what they want and what sounds good, they may not choose the Oreo.
Right.
Or Oreos.
Mm. Right.
That's making my wheels turn. So my girls, you know, come home from school and they want a snack, and they always go for junk food. And we don't keep a lot of the junk food in the house just because mm-hmm. we just don't. But so they're allowed to pick. If it's there, they're allowed to mm-hmm. eat it. It's not bad. But I don't know if this is right or wrong, but I talk to them often about like what's going to make your belly give you the energy that you want to do the things you want to do. So like, yes, you can eat those Girl Scout cookies or those Oreos, but you're going to be hungry in an hour and we're mm-hmm. not eating dinner yet. So what could you eat so that would actually make your body feel good until mm-hmm. we have dinner? Or, I don't know. But
I think that, and this is one thing that I think is really important, is that this is a paradigm shift, and it's super hard. It is super, super hard. So making sure that you bring curiosity into the conversation and not just judgment, because mm-hmm. we're not going to do it. I don't even do everything right mm-hmm. when it comes to just having a positive outlook on food sometimes. But as far as when it comes to, like, I think that's a great perspective of how will that make your belly feel. Mm-hmm. Like, that's encouraging them to check in with their body and not just follow a set of rules. That would be a really great time to say, hey, if you really want cookies, but we're not eating in an hour or two or 2 or 3 hours, we don't have dinner, maybe you should pair it with something a little bit, in your mind, you know, satiating. Mm-hmm. So like a cheese stick. So mm-hmm. cookies and a cheese stick or mm-hmm. or cookies and milk or whatever. Because regardless, those cookies are going to give them energy. Mm-hmm. But like you said, it's maybe not going to be as lasting energy. If they paired it with protein, that would feel
sure.
a little bit more satisfying. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As a dietitian, like, you know the science behind the, and I know we're not supposed to use these words, but the good food and the bad food, or the nourishing food and the non-nourishing mm-hmm. food, or the food that can be harmful to your health, and the food that, you know, there's the... Who said it? I don't think it was Socrates, but it was something along the line. Medicine can be, or food can be your best medicine, or it can mm-hmm. be your greatest killer. I know that is not what it is at all.
It's a good
poison
summary.
Or something like that.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I am not a fan of that phrase.
Yeah.
I think that's really misleading for people, mm-hmm. especially people that need actual medication.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are food cannot replace the the job of medication, and medication is not food. So that you'll see the phrase like let food be your medicine and medicine be your food.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, that's just not a helpful, mm-hmm. we have to be able to identify that they're two different things and they serve different purposes.
Sure.
So have we given food this like magical quality that right. it needs to be stripped mm-hmm. of?
Yeah.
Like it's just food, so. Stop overthinking it.
Yeah. I mean, food is extremely powerful in a lot of ways. But I think that people underestimate a healthy relationship with food
mm-hmm.
because you could eat the most nutrient packed foods on the planet, but still have a really unhealthy relationship with food.
Sure.
So, I think being able to eat a variety of foods, be able to be flexible with your options, mm-hmm. I think that's the best route.
Yeah. So do you think that it's actually, we need to separate, these are two different relationships, like your relationship with food and then how food serves your body are yeah. two different things.
Yeah, I think they can be different. They can be, really, I think it comes down to just becoming in tune with your body
mm-hmm.
and knowing what makes you feel the best mm-hmm. versus diet culture's message, what makes you look the best.
Right,
you
know? Right. I noticed that when I was, because I've tried all the diets, mm-hmm. I just, more out of curiosity, like to see if my body does feel better if I yeah. do these things. But that the time that I was putting into some of the food and the preparation and the money and just yeah. going, I am really bitter right now. Like, I do not want to spend one more minute messing with food.
Yeah.
And then I would do something like go through the drive-thru at McDonald's or get a Lean Cuisine just because I know that the mental energy that goes into this is I need to not think about mm-hmm. my food decision right now
right.
because I'm going to lose my mind.
Yeah.
And that's always been more of it, like obsessing over and punishing myself
mm-hmm.
after I had made what I had thought was a poor decision
right.
with my food choices. And finally giving myself some grace and going, yeah, Chick-fil-A is okay because mm-hmm. you don't have to think about it and it's going to taste good and then you're not going to be hungry anymore.
Right.
That's really all you need to worry about right
yeah.
now.
It's meeting yeah. the need.
Yeah, it's meeting the need. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of, oh my gosh, like my brain power would be so much more useful somewhere
yes.
else right
and
now.
And that's, I say all the time, being on a diet it's a life thief.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it may not be what your body needs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where I saw this, but it was just something along the lines of, like, nobody gets to the end of their life and wishes they had, like, spent more time worrying about their food
yeah.
or, like,
yeah.
what they weighed or the size of their pants.
Yeah.
And I try to remember that now, mm-hmm. like, in the grand scheme of things, is this important? No,
yeah.
it's not. Even though everything that I read and see and, mm-hmm. like, surround myself with tells, like,
yeah.
that's a hard battle to fight mm-hmm. all the time.
It really is, yeah.
So this is how I gave you this one ahead of time because I was like, I don't know what the answer to this is. So not that I ask questions I know the answer to, but so we see in the media a lot of like this body positivity.
Mm-hmm.
So last week I followed this girl on Instagram and Jess and I have talked about her before. She's a, like, what would be counterculture to skinny. I don't know how you say.
If you want politically
what do
correct
I?
in this movement, bigger bodied.
Okay.
And depending on who you're talking to, but if we're willing to, if all bodies are good bodies,
mm-hmm.
and we're able to be very objective with identifying bodies, depending on who you talk to, I just want to make that clear.
Mm-hmm.
Saying a body is fat is appropriate.
Okay.
Mary is not comfortable saying
that.
I'm
not going to say that.
I know.
I just feel like,
right,
I feel like I would
hard.
Hurt. Like would be,
right.
That sounds because
mm-hmm.
it would be hurtful to me. Like
yeah, for somebody to
yeah,
say that.
And
yeah.
I hear what, and like I can process through that and understand like
mm-hmm.
taking the power away from that word is good. But yeah, like I
right. I grew up like yeah. really being anti F word.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can think of a million other F words I would want you to call me besides fat.
Right. It's so hard.
Million might be a stretch, but like
so
I don't.
So full figured?
She is a larger woman. Okay. That's my story.
Bigger bodied.
Yep. And she is not concerned at all with what you think. And I'm drawn to that. Like I'm very interested in her attitude. So I follow her on Instagram and like to say that this is, I don't know. Like I just want to support her because I am very intrigued by her. She was in the news last week because a razor company saw her picture in a bathing suit and asked if they could share it on their, it was a women's razor. Mm-hmm. Like she has hair on her legs and I bet she shaves them sometimes.
Right.
So like the company said, can we use this? We want to be body inclusive. I don't know if that's the right word either,
but
so they shared the picture and Twitter lost their minds. Like she was on Good Morning America. Like she's been in the news many, many times because her body.
Anna O'Brien.
She's weird. Like not to do with her body size at all. She's super weird. her personality is weird.
She does weird things.
She does weird dances. She's weird things.
She's odd.
Yeah.
She's odd as a human, not having anything to do with her size.
She celebrates her.
Yes. And she is not. So, what I'm. This is a long question, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
What is happening? There's a girl I follow on Instagram. She is lives in a bigger body and is all about the body positivity movement. How does that mesh with bucking diet culture? Because I know that you're gonna say this is wrong. She just needs a snack. This is wrong thinking, but because I'm still trying to tell people that there is a size that is acceptable and there's a size that's not. Like, in my head, I'm still let's all be body positive, but only so big. Or, how do I make that all fit? Do you know what I'm saying?
I do. It is hard to navigate.
Because there's I know you're going to be talking. I'm just going to keep talking. There's, like, an actual, like, there are literal health concerns sometimes for some people by the choices they make. Do you agree with that or no?
So.
Help me.
This is important.
Okay.
So I'm so glad that you brought it up. I think it's really, I'm noticing I'm starting every sentence with I think.
Well, that's why you're here.
That's okay.
We cannot determine the health of a person by looking at their body.
Right.
So disease occurs in all bodies, all size bodies, I should say.
Sure.
So by saying, yes, I want to celebrate all bodies, but to a certain degree, that's still not being inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, because someone living in a thin body can have health complications behind the scenes, but get celebrated for the size of their body.
For sure.
Whereas someone that's living in a larger body may be doing a really great job of self-care, but that's where their body is meant to be.
Okay.
And they have a clean bill of health. So that's where it's just really tricky, where we just don't want to assume.
Mm-hmm. I think that it's being compassionate to the situation and not jumping the gun. But I, like Mary said, I'm on the same page with her. Like, you can say that they might have a clean bill of health, but do you feel like if someone is obese that they, or they have a bigger body, that they have a problem with, like, consumption? Like, taking in food? Like, they take too much?
We can't assume that, no. Because if we think of dieting and trying to control your body size, generally what happens there is a lowered metabolism.
Okay.
So the less energy you take in, mm-hmm. the more your body will try to conserve. Mm-hmm. And so just because someone is living in a larger body, we can't assume that they're eating mm-hmm. too much because it's so subjective.
Right. I mean, I just do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's because we're trained to think.
And that's how most of the population mm-hmm. believes. Mm-hmm. But if we're sending the message that someone's body is not appropriate, and then the traditional way of dealing with that would be to diet. Mm-hmm. Well, we know dieting doesn't work, which mm-hmm. I don't think we've talked about that yet.
No, go ahead.
Dieting doesn't work. Yeah. 95% of dieting attempts fail. And not to mention that dieting is the number one indicator of future weight gain.
Oh, okay.
So if you think of someone that goes on a diet, generally you will see some weight lost. Mm-hmm. However, that desire to be thin, or so you go on the diet, biologically a diet is going to require restriction of some sort. Over time, your body will try to fight. Your body doesn't know the difference between being on a diet and being in starvation mode. Mm-hmm. So it's going to do everything it can to get you out of that starvation mode. And so that's going to cause you to turn to overeating, which it's going to be a biological drive to eat. So then that overeating is going to cause you to gain that weight lost. So even, let's say you lose weight and you keep it off for a year or two, over time you're going to gain that weight back, if in generally it's more than you originally lost. Mm-hmm. So let's say you do that 5 times throughout your life. That's where it causes to be the number one indicator of future weight gain.
Mm. Okay, so in 2011, I was done having babies. I had gained weight, and I didn't feel my best. So I joined Weight Watchers and lost a significant amount of weight. And I knew as I was getting closer and closer to what I thought was my goal, I kept moving the goal. Mm-hmm. And it got weird, and it got mm-hmm. To where I couldn't see myself, even though the scale was moving. I couldn't see myself as any different than what I was in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Oh. And so I started picking through, like, well, why am I, like, what's going on in my brain that I continually think I have to lose weight when I've passed the number of my original goal? And, like, mm-hmm. so I started just working through, like, maybe it's not my body, it's my brain. Mm-hmm. And so through that time, I gained some weight back and settled in what I know is my healthy, like, a good, I know my range of being, feeling my best inside and out. Mm-hmm. Like, I know what that is. But my body almost, like, when I got too skinny, my body fought hard to get to gain weight.
Mm. Yeah.
And I felt like that was a personal failure for a while, because I got good attention when I lost all that weight.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't gain all of it back, like, I at all. But it was weird to see, excuse me, how I was almost fighting what my body thought was best versus my brain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I haven't been on a diet in over 2 years, like, purposely not been on a diet. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you think this is good or not, but I weigh myself every Saturday. Mm. And when I feel fat in my head, when I feel bigger in my head, seeing the number tells me to calm down. Mm. And when I feel good in my head and I see the number, I'm like, well, it hasn't changed. Like, I don't know what I'm getting to, but, like, what my brain thinks versus what I actually am, there's a disconnect for some reason. So mm-hmm. I have to use facts to, to make myself, realize that I'm fine. I don't know if that.
Yes.
That's a lot to unpack, Lauren. How much time do you have? 3 days?
I do.
Go.
I brought my overnight bag. Okay, let's first talk about, I think it's really important that we remove the shame and the guilt away from, like, going on a diet in the first place. I'm not saying that you have it, but for those that maybe are dieting,
okay,
I think a lot of ways that's an attempt to care for yourself. Mm-hmm. It's and it's a naive way of doing so.
Okay.
And that sounds like that's what it started for you, is an attempt to really care for yourself. And then it just kind of... It
picked up steam.
Right.
Yeah.
It transgressed into more of an unhealthy relationship, mm-hmm, with food and your body. So... I think I love that saying, like, you could feel that your body wasn't where it needed to be. Like, your body was trying to do what it needed to get you back, mm-hmm, to a place that felt good mentally, physically, emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
But based off of culture and our messaging, you were fighting that. And that's where diet culture is so problematic, is that it really emphasizes self-control over self-care.
Mm-hmm.
And it teaches us... Again, I'll go back to what I said at the beginning. It teaches us to feel like our bodies cannot be trusted,
mm-hmm,
and that we have to take ownership, and we have to have willpower and self-discipline, and when really that's not how our bodies were designed to function. I think there was a lot there, and I want to tackle it all, but in regards to weighing.
Yes.
I'm trying to think of how I want to say this.
Are you pro scale or no scale?
No scale.
And I will say, the only time that a scale is ever used in my office is if someone's coming out of residential treatment.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Due to
Right.
Severe
malnourishment.
Right. Okay.
How do you feel about, so I have a pair of jeans. If those jeans fit, I know I'm fine. If those jeans don't fit.
So I guess, what does fine mean?
Like,
She's feeling good.
Like,
she's feeling herself in her Levi's.
I don't know.
So it's like I'm monitoring, I guess.
Yeah,
but
that comes down to your self-worth, I think.
I know that I can do the activities I want to do, enjoy the foods I want to enjoy.
Be comfortable
in my skin. Yeah. I don't know if these are bad, like, trigger, like, words that I've been taught as opposed to words that I feel. Of just, I know where I feel most confident. And it's not what culture tells me, because culture would tell me I still weigh too much. Like, that, like, you know.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I just,
mm-hmm, yeah. No,
and I'm not afraid of gaining weight. If, like, I know, like, my rhythm is every spring and every fall, or every spring I put on like 5 pounds, and like just without even trying, like, and then the summer comes and it just, like, naturally, cause mm-hmm, we're moving more.
Yeah.
And then around Christmas, I don't know if that's bad, but I've tracked my weight for so long that, mm-hmm, I know the natural rhythm of me, mm-hmm, gaining and losing like 5 or 6 pounds,
mm-hmm,
and not tracking what I eat or what I'm monitoring.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. You're looking at me kind of weird.
No.
I know.
I just kept
I don't know.
Of everything Mary said that I was like, she's not supposed to say that. Yeah, she's not supposed to say that. That's not nice.
So I feel
that's
like,
not okay.
Like, I don't know, because I don't feel pressure to lose weight, but I also know what is a best weight for me.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think.
And so I self-monitor.
Again, right, I think that's where curiosity just is really important in this situation.
Okay.
So ultimately, the goal, if I'm working with someone to really heal their relationship with food or body, my goal for them would be, they put on a pair of jeans and it fits tight and they say, so what?
Okay.
So what? Like, and that's really more not just like, that's not a way to be insensitive. It's just, so what? Like, how does that impact my life? And the reason why is because if we put pressure on ourselves that my pants should not be fitting tight, what do we do to make them not tight? It's subconscious.
So then it becomes restricting things.
Right. And it could be very unintentional. It could be very subconscious. But I'm going to not be... So because my pants were tight, I'm not going to listen to my body and know what it wants.
I'm not going to feed myself when I'm hungry because of my tight jeans.
Right. I'm not going to eat what I'm craving because my tight jeans. And the same goes to... weighing yourself, because you can you don't have to step on a scale to know if you're caring for yourself. That number doesn't really give you any information, because you could be staying within a certain weight range and not be doing a great job of self-care.
Yes. So yes, I understand that.
That's where I'm
sweating.
But I know it is a tricky combo.
Just gonna let my armpits air out right now.
But I think that through your journey, like, this may just be part of
the next step.
Yeah. Yeah. So no judgment.
I just, this is, because you said self-worth, and I just had this conversation with our guru, Lisa, and,
I know her.
And I said, yeah, I know. And so I said something to her along the lines of, and she, you guys, I'm just, this is a little tidbit that doesn't have anything to do with anything other than, I feel like Lisa got a little frustrated with me this week.
I love it when she gets frustrated.
Yeah, I was just like. Like, it was, I was like, oh, no, this is not good. And, no, but I said something. I was like, but Mary, and she was like, but Mary knows her worth. And I was like, okay, never mind.
But I just had that conversation with Lauren. Maybe I don't. Well,
that's what I'm saying. But I just think, I think that it can be compartmentalized. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. You're,
in sections.
Like, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, you know your talent, you know your gift, you know your relationship with God. You know, you're like, you, there's a lot of places that you know your worth and you have confidence, but the little bit that you've shared with me about how you grew up and that stuff was ingrained in you early.
Yeah.
Early. Yeah.
Yeah. And from hearing your story, Mary, it really does sound like a lot of healing has taken place
already. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure. With your relationship with food. I mean, just the story that you shared.
Yeah. And thank you for coming to my therapy session, everyone.
We're all going to be weighing in.
I know, like,
I'm going to conference Lisa in right now.
And now our special guest from the bathroom, Lisa. I think just kind of where Jess and I often connect is our love of knowledge and books. Mm-hmm. And when I'm interested with something, I consume information on it. And so I would say in the past maybe year and a half, I have just consumed, like, what have I been buying into that is not true? Mm-hmm. How does that fit? And what I actually know is capital T true, like,
right. True.
Yeah. And then how do I filter myself through that? Like, how do I, so this is just the next layer, I think, for me, is just like figuring out, what would be wrong with a different size pair of jeans or, yeah, that's it.
Or
like
not,
the jeans.
Yeah. Or not knowing that number on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there are some, sometimes, oh my gosh, this is so embarrassing. So like if we go out to eat on a Friday, I know if I eat Mexican on a Friday, I don't want to weigh myself on the Saturday morning because I'm retaining some water. So I am not going to trust the number then. Mm-hmm. So I just skip it. And then that might happen for a couple weeks. And if I think this is the next step for me, is it goes a couple weeks and then I think, well, I must weigh an incredible amount, even though nothing in my body would say that besides I haven't weighed myself in a couple weeks. And then when I hop back on the scale, it's pretty much still the same. Mm-hmm. So learning to trust my body over a scale, I think, is where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a huge step.
Yeah.
Huge. And also, I think it's important that we address that what you're doing is really normal.
Yeah.
But I want to make it clear that normal doesn't mean helpful.
Right. We normalize a lot of bad things.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that everybody has a relationship with their scale. I know that mine's Tuesday, and it's for this, like, it's the same reason that you said, like, if we go out to eat on Friday and Saturday, okay, well then that gives me
the
Sunday and Monday.
Yeah,
that gives me Sunday and Monday to maybe those 2 pounds will disappear, or, you know, but I've always weighed on Tuesday. But then my scale, the batteries died.
Woo!
And and so
I hate buying batteries for things.
And so Max is like, you can use, he has a scale in his bathroom. And he said, you can use mine. And I was like, no, that's not my scale.
It's
and
not
it
the same.
Won't, it won't go. It won't be the same because yeah. that's not the scale I've been using. And it's tied to the app on my phone. And that's where I can see all of my weight changes. And Max was like, never mind. Never mind. Never mind. You know,
a teenage yeah. boy who like wants to weigh more and
yes.
just.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Can eat everything all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting because in my field, a lot of times we will check in with a client that's really hard, is having a hard time breaking up with the scale.
Mm-hmm.
Asking, like, what are you hoping to find? Like, what are you hoping that the scale tells you? Or are you hoping or looking for a way to feel?
Mm-hmm. Like from an inanimate object.
Right.
How wild is that? That's right. not even a person or a celebrity or a family member or anything. That is just... That is nothing.
Right.
That is something you could so easily throw in the trash.
And there's so...
Yeah.
It's so subjective.
Yeah.
To, you know, like Mary said, our bodies change throughout the year, and they're meant to.
Mm-hmm.
It's that's how our bodies were designined.
And, like, women's bodies change throughout a month.
Oh,
so, like, I know... Yeah, like, yeah. I know when I'm going to just weigh more mm-hmm. for no other reason than my body,
right.
like, in hormones, has mm-hmm. nothing to do with food.
Right.
I'm and at the point
doing what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, like to be functioning and healthy. Mm-hmm. I'm at the point where after I weigh myself, the number doesn't change anything that I do, like good or bad. I don't reward myself or starve mm-hmm. myself. I just make a note of it.
You're aware.
Yeah.
Well, and mm-hmm. I want to argue at that point a little bit because
I no, I'm not saying it's right. Like
yeah, no,
I'm
no,
just
no. I don't mean that. I think that's what most people that are
think they're doing
yeah
mm-hmm.
but it's really more in the subconscious than you realize.
Okay.
I had an OB appointment the other day. I got my smear papped.
How'd it turn out? How's the schmear?
It was well, I'll edit this. It wasn't good.
Oh shit. No, yeah, no, that was not a real question. I should have asked.
That's okay.
I'm so sweaty now. That was extra sweat. I have
no
to
worries. So no, but you go in and yeah. I ate Chick-fil-A on the way to the doctor's appointment. She was like, if you could step on the scale. And I was like, if you could not say the number out loud, I'm not going to look at it because I just ate lunch and I know I'm going to be upset. And she was like, okay. And she was,
that was
step
great.
Off the scale,
nice.
You know.
Yeah.
It was?
Oh, yeah, that's beautiful.
Oh.
You yeah. thought that was a bad story.
I thought that was a bad story.
No, I think that's great.
Because yeah. it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. And if you are, that's all about awareness and knowing, like, if I hear that information, it's going to make me upset. And I don't really need to be told how to feel right now.
Well, look at me.
Good
you
job.
Can also, you can also opt out of being weighed.
Yeah. I don't mind because I was, it doesn't matter. It makes no difference to me. But yeah, I was just like, can you mm-hmm. just.
Our nurse says you can step on backwards if you don't want to see
yeah.
the number backwards.
Okay, that's
like,
nice.
I just need to write this down.
Yeah.
And they don't really, I mean.
Technically,
they really don't need it.
Yeah, no, I know, and I, she was just like, so, okay, I was like, I'm gonna take off these Birkenstocks, and my keys are in my pocket, and I'm,
and
nom,
the
nom,
sweater,
yeah,
take out my contacts.
Next thing you know, I'm just standing there naked.
How do then does the promotion of like lower health insurance rates for
oh yeah,
is that a bad? That's a whole another episode, like
yeah.
Okay.
It's tricky.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure, like you said, diet culture in the healthcare industry is
yeah.
a whole nother.
Or like life insurance. If
animal.
You
yeah.
weigh a certain amount,
yeah.
you get lower rates on your mm-hmm. life insurance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's so I used to work for corporate wellness.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine I was tracking everyone's BMI and blood pressure and all that jazz.
Mm-hmm.
I think it can be helpful to track like BMI, cholesterol. Those are health indicators, but mm-hmm. not BMI or weight. That's mm-hmm. not helpful.
Mm. So there's also an insurance incentive at a lot of companies that if you are a non-smoker.
Right.
So this is my thing, is that there are foods that can be carcinogens, right? And
yes, but the dose makes the poison.
Okay. So, yeah. Just making that comparison. Mm-hmm. I mean, but there's also like, okay, so do you like, how much are you in the sun? Do you go to a tanning bed? Like, there's a thousand things
yeah.
that they could
Which
take
is,
into consideration.
Do you live with a home if mold? Like,
right. Yeah,
like,
right, exactly.
And those are
more important.
Right.
Yeah. Huh.
So how do we combat the messages that we're told in the media? And like you said, families. Like, yeah. So I think a lot of where my shift in perspective and like search for knowledge started was when my kids mm-hmm. started to be, it wasn't like they're smart and aware and they're not little mm-hmm. toddlers and they don't just eat whatever I give them. Like they, mm-hmm. and I don't want them to live like I lived, or I don't want them to. I remember being 11 and out of the back of a 17 magazine ordering the Swedish Body System, which I thought was a diet sure. pill yeah. and it was a book and I was supposed to read it and I was like,
nope,
give me my money back. Like I was wanting some pills.
Give me that magic pill.
Yeah, like at 11 and that right. my daughter is 10 and also my like the Graham genetics are tall and lanky and super skinny. My daughter is super scrawny. But nothing to do with what she eats. So, right. like, I'm also really...
That's the metabolism part yeah, of this,
like,
right?
I yeah, also genetic, want, yeah. I also want her to be aware that, like, she is not more valued because, like, yeah. this sounds bad to say. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want her to believe that she is worth more because she's skinny.
Right.
And and she is mostly because of who her father is. It has right. nothing to do with her choices.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, like, just that whole, privilege. Like, balancing of, like... Mm-hmm. Food is just food and it doesn't hold the power over you, but also you're really skinny and people are going to think that you're good because you're skinny. Like right. just.
Yeah. Or the backlash of that is there's stigma with people in larger bodies and there's stigma with people in smaller, mm-hmm. in smaller bodies mm-hmm. that, well, if they're really thin, then they mm-hmm. have a problem, which, or, you know, depends on who you ask, or they're glorified for their body size yeah. or shape. So weight stigma is across the board.
Yeah. yeah. And so I just, I think that's where it became more real to me in a way that it hadn't been before, is because I'm raising daughters
yeah.
that I don't want to be swallowed by this right. whole
yeah.
thing again.
Yeah. yeah.
So my question, which I ask a question and I tell you 40 things. How do we combat this message that we are told? Mm-hmm. Where do we even start?
Yeah.
Fighting.
It's super hard to navigate.
Find a rock, live under it.
That's how you do it. Homeschool in the middle of the desert. And don't get on the internet ever.
No, I'm just
kidding. Yeah. Even that's scary.
Yeah. Knowing that you have the right to set boundaries around any topic of conversation that makes you feel uncomfortable, mm-hmm. I think is the first order of business. That can be super tricky because the people that need the we're all in therapy. We all know the people that need the boundaries are the ones that are going to push them back the
always.
Most.
Yeah.
And so just really staying firm with that boundary and simply saying, you know, I don't want to engage with this conversation. I don't want to, let's just leave diet talk off the table. Mm. And one thing that's helped me over the years and also with my clients is knowing that by setting that boundary, it's not only helping you, but it's also helping them. Diet talk is toxic for all people. It's mm-hmm. not a helpful conversation to have. So knowing that you are not only helping yourself, but others as well.
Mm-hmm. Mary, talking about that. So Addie looked like a chubby kid prior to her going into the hospital and being admitted and starting the ketogenic diet.
Like a normal chubby.
A normal, yes, like 8, 9 years old or however, 9, 10 years old. Like just she's just filling out the way girls do at that age. Mm-hmm. And it was very, very normal. So she goes on this diet.
Yeah.
And, or this menu, whatever you want to say. Literally, it was a last ditch effort. Like medication right. didn't work. This was what we were going to do. Extreme.
Very effective.
Yeah. Very effective. Well, it's very
people.
Effective for some people. It was not for her.
Okay.
So what happens is we do this diet for X amount of time. She's miserable. Well, I mean, we're all miserable.
Because, not to interrupt, but didn't yeah. you were weighing like to the
I was cutting grapes in half and weighing everything. Like everything that she ever ate in a meal, which she would have 5 or 6 small meals through the day, would fit on like a coffee saucer. Oh. I mean, it was awful. or it was full of heavy whipping cream and sour cream. I mean, I know that sounds good to us, but when you're a kid,
like a day, not
yeah, for exactly, all the days. It was awful,
rigid.
Yes, yeah. Very rigid.
I mean, so not the keto that you're that yes, we're seeing exactly. now. No, like, it's not like the same.
That's not the same. And so she ends up losing. I mean, she ends up losing almost 20% of her body weight for a 10-year-old. Yeah, wow. So that's what she is. And she hasn't recovered. This diet was 3 years ago, and she still hasn't gained that weight back. Well, I mean, she's gotten taller, and there's, you know, things change.
Yeah.
But so had a doctor tell us, like, the time in which you did this, like the beginning of puberty or the very, you know, you probably changed her metabolism forever. Mm. And it was just like, oh, my gosh. So now I remember when there were times that people would be like, she's so shy. And I'm like, don't say that she's shy. You know, don't say that, because that puts it in her head that she's shy and then she acts shy.
Yeah.
And now it's like, she's so skinny. She's so scrawny. Aww. Oh, my gosh. She's not. We don't have skinny, scrawny kids in our family. Like, our kids are always thick and healthy. And I'm just like, what the F are you saying right now?
Yeah.
Right.
Like, she can hear you. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and I really also... I do want to chalk it up to, like, her dad was very skinny and scrawny at this age, so I'm still like, maybe it wasn't her metabolism that changed.
Right. Well, and I'm hopeful that metabolism can always be reversed.
Right.
And can be...
Yeah.
You can turn a weak, for lack of better words, a weak metabolism into a strong metabolism.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's just maybe where her body wants to be.
Right. It just makes me nervous that that we were focusing on, it is a very big aspect of our lives, her mm-hmm. seizure disorder, but we focused so hard on that and healing that, yeah. the distress that we put her, not just her mind over, but her body, like right. we were starving her.
Yeah.
We mm-hmm. were starving her in a very controlled manner. Like, her body was in starvation mode. That's what happens. That's why the ketones come in and all the science behind it. But it was just like, oh my gosh, like, I really feel like it's going to take years to recover. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to say damage, because like you said, it does. It saves kids' lives sometimes. Mm-hmm. What now we're dealing with is just, it makes me nervous.
Yeah. Yeah. And to put in context, that diet is so rigid and just not sustainable and so, so hard. And you were doing it for her livelihood.
We were to keep her alive. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Like, we weren't just doing it
for the fun of it.
No, this was extreme seizure activity, right. Like, stop breathing, the whole thing. Yeah.
Right. Hospital monitor.
Hospital. Like, yes. We were admitted to start the diet. I had to go into training.
Yeah.
Like, it was, we had computer monitors, and we had to put in every single thing that she ate, weighed. I mean, it was nuts. It was nuts. Yeah.
Diet. Whereas people are doing this extreme way of eating just to alter the size of their body for not their well-being, not their life.
No.
I mean, that may be the innocent start of, you know, they think that they're doing something to take care of themselves, when really it can be really harmful.
Yeah, I mean, when the doctor was like, you probably changed your metabolism for life, and I was like, well, damn, I should have gone on the diet too. Changed my metabolism.
You thought that,
yeah, I did. That was my first, like, envious almost, that she, oh my gosh, yeah. Well, now she's not going to have a weight problem for the rest of her life. This is awesome. And then it's like, ooh, we may have done, this may not be good. Yeah.
And you making a comment about family members having
opinions,
yes. Especially in the females, like, that's kind of what you do. You get in this
certain generation, especially. Yes.
Just feel very, very they're
empowered tell you their thoughts.
I had a great aunt one time that said somebody said, oh my gosh, doesn't Jessie look just like Annie, which is her sister, my grandma? Doesn't she? No, Annie'd never let herself get that big.
No.
Well, she said that. Thanks, Aunt Cheney. Thanks a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's really a projection of their own insecurities.
Their right, issues. Right, right. Yeah, it was just, the things that people say, like you said, right. It's just.
It's more about them than you.
Right. And so that's the boundaries mm-hmm. that I need to, that I need to be aware of and saying, hey, we're just not going to discuss this. Right. Yeah.
Right. That kind of reminded me. So when we were talking about the body positivity and the people living in bigger bodies, Jess and I talk a lot about trauma. Mm-hmm. Do you address or believe or think that a lot of times we are in some people's bodies are telling you about their trauma? I don't know if I said that right, but
you hear weight gain, like women who gain weight. Well, it was to protect myself because I had been abused or I had been raped I thought that if physically making my body bigger was protecting myself.
Yeah, or like the extreme of anything is sometimes a result of, some kind of trauma or mental illness almost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No,
I don't.
Yeah. I think I like where you're going with this. So no, we can't look at someone's body and be like,
they were abused because right. they weigh right. a certain
or
number.
They're
yeah.
super thin, they have a hard life. However, I think through conversation and through learning more and more about their relationship with food and their body, mm-hmm. I absolutely think there's
mm-hmm. a connection.
No
at some time.
A connection.
Right.
An eating disorder, which I'll throw out a little statistic here, 1 in 4 dieters go on to develop an eating disorder. That's a clinical diagnosis. So that's 1 in 4 people, but we're also not taking in consideration the people that have an unhealthy relationship with food. So mm-hmm. disordered eating, food preoccupation,
right.
all of that. So, but an eating disorder, and this is maybe a conversation for a different day, but an eating disorder is an emotional management system.
Okay.
So, and it can transgress into different forms of mm-hmm. an eating disorder. Whether we think of the traditional ways that eating disorders can happen through bulimia, anorexia, binge eating disorder.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a lot of different variations of eating disorders. Mm-hmm. So yeah, absolutely. To your point, it is an emotional management system, and a lot of times an eating disorder is a disease along with trauma, OCD,
mm-hmm.
depression, anxiety, just to name a few.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hmm.
Wow. All right. So can you recommend any books or resources?
Oh, yes.
Yes. Oh, yes.
This is our favorite part.
Yes.
So I would say to learn more about, we've really talked a lot about, we haven't called it this, but Health at Every Size is the paradigm shift that all bodies deserve respectful health care.
Okay.
So Health at Every Size is a really great starting point. Mm-hmm. It's written by Linda Bacon. And Intuitive Eating is the framework that I practice off of. And that was written, it's a book called Intuitive Eating. And it was written by Evelyn Triboli and Elise Resch. Those are the top go-to.
The two. Yeah, that's great. The starters. Okay.
Right, right.
Okay.
There are a lot of other books that I would be happy to share if you wanted to share on your website or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Several podcasts, absolutely. It's a huge movement, so there's a lot of resources. It's making its way across the U.S. And then...
So I know you're really active on social media and you can tell people where to find you and to connect, but then are there other maybe Instagram accounts that you feel are powerful in doing? So I think one of the ways it's helped my brain kind of reprogram itself a little bit is for these ideas to come up in the places I'm already at. Mm-hmm. So Instagram or in books and just or listening to a podcast while I'm driving. Little sneaky tidbits are helpful, I think,
right.
especially if you're new and you're not sure about this and some of the things I believe don't match up with that. So are there maybe some good Instagram accounts that you think would be helpful for people?
Yes. So Paige Smathers, she is a registered dietitian as well, and she's my mentor. She has a podcast called Nutrition Matters.
Okay.
And just she comes from a place of self-compassion and no judgment and just a very gentle way of spreading these messages. I would say definitely start there. There are several dietitians that do what I do that have accounts that I couldn't even pick a few right now because there's so many and there's so many good ones. They're a little bit more radical, but also very effective people doing this. There's a podcast called Food Psych by Christy Harrison, who's also a dietitian and an intuitive eating a certified intuitive eating counselor. She is very much a health at every size, intuitive eating, but more on the social justice movement of body positivity and, and dismantling weight stigma.
Very cool.
So you do, on your Instagram, you do a really good job of sharing other people's stuff. So like sort of like an endorsement of just saying like, this is good. And so I think if someone follows you at Renovate Your Plate on Instagram, they would also be open to a whole world of like that.
Right. Yeah. I try to share as many resources as possible.
Okay.
Okay.
How else could people get a hold of
you? Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. So you said Renovate Your Plate on Instagram. Is that also on Facebook and Twitter?
Not Twitter. I haven't jumped on that yet.
It's awful. It's like the worst bar you've ever been in. Stay off of it.
Don't go there.
No, don't. You don't have to do it.
I just can't. I just feel like a 70-year-old when I get on there.
But. Yeah, don't. No, yeah, don't. Yeah, so.
I actually bet more 70-year-olds are better than me. But the email.
Email. Okay.
lauren.ryp@gmail.com.
Okay.
And you have a website?
I do. renovateyourplate.net.
Okay.
Awesome.
And so if people are local, and we talked a little bit about what you do in your practice, are you accepting clients that can come in and kind of work through some of the lies and maybe have a session kind of like I just did with you on the podcast?
Yeah.
Just to like start working and picking through and having someone knowledgeable to say that's an unhealthy belief versus here's the truth, like things like
for
that.
Sure.
So
yep, reach out. I have a wait list right now, but
okay,
I'll be accepting.
Not clients. Terrible podcast listeners get bumped to the top.
Yep, that's for sure. 10%. I'm just kidding.
All right, well, Lauren, thank you so much. I know that I've learned a lot, and I feel like we can have you on every season to discuss another matter regarding diet culture and how it affects our lives. So thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much. Thanks,
Lauren.
This was fun.
You've been listening to Not Terrible with Jess Hooker and Mary Graham. Connect with the podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Not Terrible Podcast. Visit them at notterriblepodcast.com for show notes and additional content. You can sign up for their newsletter to receive bonus episodes and podcast extras. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast provider. Not Terrible is recorded in conjunction with The Chick McGee Show and Off the Air Podcast. Recorded in the Front Room Studio, this has been a Waco production.